You get dinged up in last night's game? Or are you a weekend warrior that still thinks you've got what it takes to play, but nagging injuries are slowing you down? It's time to talk to some of the region's top sports medicine specialists. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show. All you ever wanted to know about sports medicine and maybe, just maybe, a little bit more. Here are your hosts, Dr. Brian McCarty and Big Time Mike McGivern on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Welcome into the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. I'm Mike McGivern alongside my co-host, Dr. Brian McCarty. Doctor, how are you today?
You know, I am fantastic today because today is my 23rd wedding anniversary.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So that's thank awesome. You, April, for putting up with me for 23 years.
I
really appreciate it.
I'm sure you all kicked your coverage like most of us.
Yeah, I am very lucky. I have a wonderful wife and a wonderful family, and they are the best part of my life for sure. So, again, a great day for me today.
Good for you. Congratulations. You know, that's a big number, so well done. Hey, we normally take this segment and talk about, you know, some normal-type injuries and some things that, you know, have happened to a boxer or a brewer, but today we're going to talk about some firework problems, and we're going to talk about Rory McIlroy. And, you know, that Irish boy just wanted to have a kick around with his buddies, and, man, he is out now for
yeah.
a while.
This is really a shame because Rory McIlroy is the number one rated golfer in the world. For those of you who think the Tiger's still there, he's not.
He's not.
And he has a very incredibly powerful swing, and unfortunately that swing requires him to be able to plant and twist on his left ankle.
Right.
And the left ankle is the one he injured during his kick around with his buddies.
There you
and,
go.
And he plays a lot of soccer, so it's not something that he doesn't normally do, but unfortunately, he sprained his ankle, had a grade 3 sprain, meaning he completely tore one of the ligaments in the ankle called the anterior talofibular ligament, the ATFL, which is the most common ligament injured in ankle sprains. And I think he's tried to get himself going again, but he can't. And I just want to touch on one important thing about this, and that is in golf in particular, because a lot of people say, well, God, you know, the football player sprains his ankle and he's, you know, he's out there in
right.
5 minutes. And what's wrong with this guy, you know? In golf, it's a sequence of events that leads to your swing. And a lot of golfers have destroyed their swings trying to play through injury. And I think he's been given advice that this is probably not a good idea for him. I can't imagine him not playing at the Old Course this weekend or this coming week.
Right.
If he had any chance to compete.
You know, and I'm going to quote Dr. Adam Cohen, who says, if it's a complete rupture, it could also affect the surrounding areas. And I think that that's important to know.
Yeah, what he's referring to is the anterior capsule of the joint. And I have a feeling that's exactly what happened. Because when you have a soccer injury to an ankle and you're kicking, which sounds like what he was doing, he was kicking and somebody kind of hit him when he was kicking, his foot went too far down and you tear the anterior capsule of the joint. And they swell a lot. They're very painful. And even though the ankle's not that unstable, it's just impossible for him to plant and twist on it and be effective.
You know, what's interesting is I'm listening to all the talking heads. And, you know, for months on end, they'll say, are golfers athletes? Are they athletes? And then a guy goes out, he's playing soccer with his buddies.
Yep.
He gets injured. They go, well, why is he trying to prove he's an athlete? Well, he's out there having a little fun. He's a young guy. And that's what he likes to do. And he could have done that walking downstairs. Do you know? He could have hit a curb wrong and done that.
He could have, yes. I mean, you know, we all take chances with things. I mean, I don't think that's a very high risk thing for him to do, but I'm sure he'll get a lot of criticism for it because he got hurt. And, you know, it's unfortunate. I mean, he's going to miss at least this major, perhaps another major. It's hard to know. It's a bad time of the year for this. And maybe next year he won't be doing that.
No, you know what? And speaking of that, I bet next 4th of July there's not going to be a lot of NFL players messing around with
yes,
fireworks.
Yes, that's the other issue that came up this week. People, please be careful with these fireworks. They're actually somewhat dangerous.
No doubt. You know, C.J. Wilson, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, that's the one that not a lot of people are talking about. He lost two fingers in a fireworks accident. They're talking about Jason Pierre-Paul from the New York Giants, whose right index finger was amputated. And I don't know. He can still play football, obviously.
He can, although, you know, that's a very important gripping finger for a tackler. You know, so it's he did not sign his contract. He was in the franchise phase of this, and it's going to cost him a lot of money. They may drop him down to your level, Mike, in terms of contracts.
Well, if he gets to that 12 million.
I don't know if
he'll
get the player option you have. But,
right.
But, no, it's, I mean, like, these are tragic injuries. But I think it's a reminder to people, I hope. I mean, we heard about two fatalities from people launching fireworks off of their bodies.
Right.
This is not a good idea, people.
No. Just never has been, in fact.
No, it hasn't. And in doctor school, they taught us not to do that. So I would recommend that you not do that.
Well, let's find out from our special guest if they taught him that as well. Dr. Aaron O'Toole is in studio with us. It's good to see you again.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm excellent.
Yeah. Did they teach you that in medical school, not to do fireworks off your body?
Yeah. They may have mentioned it a couple of times just to keep those M80s off your chest.
Yeah. That's probably a pretty smart move. Hey, let's talk a little bit about your background and and where you grew up, where you went to school.
Sure. So I grew up in Minnesota. Don't hold that against me too much. Just south of St. Paul and Eagan. And then I've kind of done a little bit of a tour of the Midwest and actually a little bit out east. I went to Madison for undergrad.
Excuse me, could you say that again?
A little bit to Madison.
Madison, there you go. That's what he was looking for.
He's another Badger.
Another Badger.
Yeah, joining my Badger club.
Man, well, there's been a lot of you Badger boys in here, which is good.
We're
I feel
all
right at home.
Over.
That's good. That's awesome.
Just had a really good time in Madison, so then I had to do some additional schooling out at the University of Pennsylvania. Did a post-bac program out there and did some research at the Children's Hospital, actually. And then to Chicago for medical school and then up here for residency, and now I practice in Oak Creek.
Well, welcome home.
Thanks.
Yeah, this is awesome. And, you know, as we talked prior to the show, and you talk about J.J. Watt and Frank Kaminsky and those guys being some of your favorite athletes, I know you're a cheesehead.
That's right.
That's I didn't hear anything about any of the Minnesota boys.
Well, why would you?
Yeah, why would you? That is a fact. Hey, our show today, we're going to talk a lot about concussions and some of the things that are happening, and it's certainly a topic that's talked about a lot in all over now, especially circles that I run in, coaching high school basketball, talking about high school football, and a sports station. This is certainly a topic now that's talked a lot about, and this is your specialty, correct?
Right. So I'm a general practice physician and have kind of niched out this coverage of concussion. I think what makes concussion difficult to manage and diagnose is that it kind of spans a lot of medical specialties. And so a lot of people can get their fingers into it if they want to, right? But it's not something that is necessarily really pushed in medical school as a topic. At least I'm pretty new out. It wasn't part of a big piece of my medical school training at all.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, we always talk about how our program is comprehensive.
Right.
And this Dr. O'Toole is a perfect example of this. Is, you know, here's a guy who helps us with concussions and helps to keep our athletes safer and helps us to stay current on exactly what the guidelines are, what the latest research is. We have conversations all the time at our meetings about how do we better manage these issues. And we're really, really fortunate to have him here today. But more importantly, our athletes out in the community are very fortunate to have him available. So it's a great benefit to have this concussion care network. So can you tell us about that?
Sure. So the idea for the network is that for Southeastern Wisconsin, really, is that we have a network of providers that athletes and non-athletes, frankly, can access to get appropriately managed for concussion. And so we've got a handful of providers generally, and then the kind of three hubs of clinics, so one in Oak Creek, one in Racine, and one in Sussex, where there are three specific providers that myself included who can kind of direct advanced management for concussion.
You know, it's and what you guys are doing for guys like me and parents and coaches is really valuable, obviously. And as we try to tell these kids, look, it's important to play safe and practice times or practice is for high school football have changed completely because of this. Correct, Brian?
Yeah, that is correct. And, you know, and we also, you know, the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Program is donating a lot of this to the community in the form of athletic training support for the Concussion Care Network, and then even things like impact testing, which is something I wanted Dr. O'Toole to talk about.
And we're going to get into that as we get into the show. I think it's important that people understand that there are guys like you that are trying, obviously, to figure this all out. It's funny because when I was playing a million years ago, you practiced for 4 hours and you did the nutcracker drill over and over again. And if you got dinged up, they said, hey, just go get some water or, you know, just hang out for a couple minutes and then come back in. But the progress that people have made, and doctors and certainly research people have made into this field, is just so valuable that it's changing the way we do things as coaches and players.
Dramatically changing, I think. And even, you know, I'm not a million years out from playing.
Right.
But still dramatically different now than what I was playing just 10 years ago.
I said I was 100 a year, 100 years
ago.
No,
you said a million.
Oh,
yeah.
Did I?
Yeah.
Because I thought, what the heck? Why'd you say that? All right.
So the one thing I wanted to point out, we had talked during the NBA playoffs about Klay Thompson's injury, where he got kneed. I don't know if you saw this, Aaron. But I was trying to explain to people, this is what happens inside a helmet, right? So speak to us a little bit about that. I mean, what really happens inside there?
So the idea for a concussive injury is that you receive trauma to the head or body that causes a dramatic shift and of movement of the brain. And that dramatic shift in the brain causes dysfunction of its activity, which then results in all the symptoms that we experience.
Yeah, so people think that the brain is just in there just, you know, sitting still. It's actually in a fluid container, and it moves when it's traumatized. Normally, it doesn't move. You know, I mean, it moves with everything else, but it can actually hit the sides of the head. And during a high impact injury, whether it be a car accident, as we were talking pre-production, or during a basketball injury or a football injury, or even just getting hit from the side can jar the head and injure the brain. Is that true?
Correct. And I think that's one of the misconceptions that we definitely have to. Educate folks about is that you don't have to hit your head to get a concussion.
He is Dr. Aaron O'Toole. You can go to mymosh.com to get more information on Dr. O'Toole, and we're going to continue this conversation. And I think not only is it a conversation that we need to talk about, but it's a conversation that I think people have to listen to, especially parents and coaches, so that they understand the progress that's being made and some of the things that you guys do to make sure that you understand this. Because it's when you talk even soccer, I mean, they're talking about changing rules or trying to change rules as far as how early you can head a soccer ball. Mm-hmm. And I think people are going, oh, wait a second, they're just heading a soccer ball. They're not like a football player getting hit. But when we talked about this earlier, there are some people that are saying, look, if you're hitting a soccer ball over and over again, that can be as bad, if not worse, than some of the football injuries we see. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And we'll continue to talk about this kind of stuff on the other side of the break because it's really interesting. And again, with the research being done, Dr. Aaron O'Toole is going to kind of get us up to date on some of the things that they're doing over at MyMosh. You can go to MyMosh.com to see more information. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show. That music for Dr. Aaron O'Toole, it's McCarty, McGivern, and O'Toole. It's got to be you two to start with, right?
It's an Irish takeover.
Oh, it's an Irish takeover. Go get a pint after we kick it around. Hey, let's talk a little bit about that Concussion Care Network, if we can, Dr. O'Toole.
Sure.
If you can, just give us an explanation of what it is and how does it work.
So, as I was mentioned before, we've got kind of physicians kind of across southeastern Wisconsin so that we can get folks into a clinic that's geographically close to them, which is a little bit different than kind of nationally. The typical concussion clinic is set up to have kind of like a super specialty clinic is you go to one place to go get your concussion care, and that can be miles and miles and miles away. So the idea here is that we're predicting that as we learn more about this, there are going to be more and more injuries, and as people become more aware of it and more educated, they're going to come and seek care. So we want to be able to provide that care in an area that's close to them, and we want to be able to provide it with physicians who are up to speed on the most recent data and most evidence-based management skills. And so what happens is when the majority of cases that hit me are from kind of the on the south side, Oak Creek, Franklin area, but people come from other places as well. And the idea is that you can get my phone number through mymosh.com, and there's also a concussion hotline that's going to be going live so that people, if they have an injury, they can call that number. We'll have kind of a concussion navigator that will answer, and then they will direct them to the appropriate clinic.
He is Dr. Aaron O'Toole. If you want to go to mymosh.com, get more information on him and his bio and how you can get a hold of him, again, mymosh.com.
Yeah, I just want to speak to this, how helpful this is. The guys that set this up, Dr. Edwards, Dr. O'Toole, Dr. Bradley, and others, have been so helpful to us to help keep people going in the right direction with this. It's a very confusing topic, and Dr. O'Toole's just been tremendous at really bringing this whole thing together. So people who don't know about it, again, a lot of people will get better, you know, and the trainers and even I as a team physician, we manage these things very frequently, the minor concussions that improve very quickly. But when things haven't gotten better or they're more severe, boy, is it helpful to be able to call Dr. O'Toole and say, hey, Aaron, I've got, this young athlete I need to get in. And, you know, they'll get him right in, get him evaluated, get the latest testing, give you the latest information, and it really makes a difference.
Well, and what for parents, you know, and for the coaching staffs, what a great gift to be able to do that quickly. And it used to be, you know, let's wait and he'll be okay. And all of a sudden, 3-4 weeks later, you know, he's not the same kid. And now you're scrambling to find out what's going on. And I think that's really important. This kind of stuff is certainly keeping our athletes safer, correct?
Agreed. I think that has always been the case, is that we kind of either rub some dirt on it and kind of shake it off. That's kind of the old school way, which I would suggest we not do anymore. But also the idea that, you know, and the data suggests that 80-90% of folks will resolve in 10 to 14 days, just with normal, typical management from their trainer and their primary, as long as they're kind of following appropriate post-concussive instructions. However, once they are outside of that two-week window, things get hairy, and we're not real sure what dictates whether or not they resolve in 3 weeks or 4 months or 6 months.
Can I ask you, and this is an ex-Badger I want to ask you about, but Al Toon was, you know, what a great, phenomenal receiver he was, not only in college but in the professional ranks as well. But reading a story about him a while ago, he had to sit in a dark room for a long time. Any light gave him headaches and stuff like that. Do you think if we knew what we know now back then, things would have changed for him?
You know, I don't know. I know that, you know, we're trying to take some of the macho out of this thing. You know, a lot of people think, well, you have a headache, get over it, take some Tylenol and get back in the game. And that's been the traditional approach to this. And, you know, I understand why that is. It's very hard to see this, isn't it? You know, you can't see, you can see a broken arm. You can't see a broken brain. And
right.
So people need to, you know, coaches, parents, and kids need to understand, hey, you know what? There's nothing wrong about being honest about these symptoms. So would Al Toon have gone back and played so many games with concussions? I don't think he would have. You know, for people who are not as incredibly old as we are, Mike, you know, Al Toon was a phenomenal, sensational receiver for the Badgers back in the early 80s, and then went and played for the Jets and retired because of concussions before that became a thing. And he just couldn't get over his headaches and couldn't play. And so he obviously had many severe concussions. If he had had access to Dr. O'Toole and the Concussion Care Network, could they have helped him? Yeah, I think they could have helped him, and maybe not let him go back so soon, and maybe he would have had a longer career.
Yeah, I think that's really important. There was also a Milwaukee Brewer third baseman, and this is a while ago, and I cannot remember his name, but he fell going after a foul ball. And the same thing happened where he could not go out into the light. He could not have lights on in his house. And it's amazing that if we had known now then what we know now, things may have been different for these guys.
Well, I think after the rub some dirt on it theory, right, then comes the cocoon therapy theory where you sit in a dark room, lights off, cold, kind of treat it like a migraine, just avoid all this extra stimuli. And that's also now shifting. And so the idea is immediately after the injury, you want to rest your brain. Absolutely, that's still the case. However, we don't want to overly socially isolate kids. our athletes, and we also want to get people moving more quickly because we think that it helps them resolve a little faster. To tie it into my Minnesota roots, so Joe Mauer, I think, is a good example here.
Right.
Right. Everybody was really bagging on him in Minnesota for having a couple bad seasons after he had that bad injury. And, like, why can't he get back on the field? Well, if you look at baseball, there's actually a good study that came out relatively recently, and you look at its target acquisition at the plate, and a lot of what happens after a concussive injury is you have difficulty with focus and with your vision. And you can imagine when balls are coming at you 100 miles an hour, it's going to be hard to hit the ball if you can't see right. And so I think he's just now starting to rebound from a pretty significant injury, and it's starting to show on the field now as well.
Yeah, I think the important takeaway from all of this is that these need to be taken seriously. And I think we're just now understanding what brain injury really is. And we're early into it, and I think it's going to get more complex and probably more helpful to know more about it. But people need to take it quite seriously and know what that is. So part of that is this impact testing that we do, right, Aaron? Mm-hmm. So can you explain that quickly?
Sure. So impact is a type of neuropsychological testing that looks at your cognitive skill set, you know, how your brain is working at any given time. And it's based on, it's now on a computer, but it was based on old pen and paper testing that was done by neuropsychologists. And the idea is that this is another way for us to help diagnose concussive injury because you are abnormal in terms of your cognitive function after an injury.
So basically they take a screening test before the season, right?
Yep.
And then if they have an injury, they can be retested to see if there's a change.
Right. So I think we're shifting much more aggressively towards getting these baseline tests and doing impact testing before the season actually starts. So we can kind of compare apples to apples. We know what your brain's looking like, how you're functioning cognitively before you get hit, and then if you were to get injured, then we can test you post-impact.
Yeah, and so Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine has provided all of our schools with this impact program.
Wow.
So the athletes are all getting tested. The trainers spend hours helping them do this, and football players especially, just in case you think you can cheat the test and make yourself look really dumb ahead of time, it's set up to detect that as well. That's happened.
Is it really?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So because some of them think, well, I'll just make myself look terrible, and then when I get hurt, I won't be bad. So
it won't be bad
no,
at all.
No, it's pretty clever.
Yeah, you can't sandbag. I think Eli Manning or Peyton was talking about trying to sandbag this test, and initially, when they became available, there's some thought that maybe you could, but they're pretty sophisticated at this point. And it flags us when people are like closing their eyes for the
right, purposely screwing up.
That's awesome, guys. Let's get to a break again. He's Dr. Aaron O'Toole. Go to mymosh.com, Concussion Care Network, and if you have any questions for him you feel as though you need to go see him, or you have a player, a student athlete, he would be the guy to go see. He's located down the Oak Creek, Franklin, kind of south side area.
Yep.
But certainly, you again, go to mymosh.com to get more information. Dr. Aaron O'Toole. On the other side of the break, we're going to discuss heading in soccer. We talked about it a little bit in the first break, our first segment. We're going to continue, and we're going to talk about CTE, chronic traumatic
encephalopathy.
I want to see if you can say it or not.
I can say it.
I want to make sure you could. What was it again? What is it? Forget you. You know what? He does this to me each and every week, Dr. Brian McCarty. That's why he's my co-host.
Imagine having medical terms on a medical show.
Yeah, that's
what a strange thing.
Well, thank goodness you've got me steering the boat on this thing.
CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy.
I said that great, didn't I?
This is 105.7 FM. The Fan.
This is Radiohead, brought to you by Dr. Aaron O'Toole. If I got fired, you're firing him for this, aren't you, Dr. McCarty? I'm just telling you.
You know, I think he was trying to represent the post-concussive state.
Welcome back to the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show.
If you feel like that, go seek Dr. O'Toole's help.
That's awesome. On Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan, I'm Mike McGivern, alongside my co-host, Dr. Brian McCarty. Our special in-studio guest is Dr. Aaron O'Toole. You can go to mymosh.com to get more information on Dr. Aaron O'Toole. So CTE, let's talk about it.
Yeah, so I have to say this because Mike's giving me bad looks. Chronic traumatic encephalopathy. So, Dr. O'Toole, lead us through this. We hear about these brain injuries, punch drunk syndrome, all these things that used to be discussed. What exactly is it, and what is happening in the brain?
Sure. So, it is CTE is a progressive degenerative disease of the brain that happens after repetitive trauma. We're kind of actively researching the ins and outs of what causes it, how fast it progresses, how much injury you need to sustain. But the thought is head trauma causes this damage to the neurons. And what happens is we've got millions of neurons in the brain that help you do your daily activities, helps you think, helps you move. And with each one of these injuries, those neurons get a little bit damaged. And there are specific little proteins. So one of the hot little topics is, or hot terms is, tau proteins. These tau proteins help these neurons stay, keep their integrity, keep them stay functional. And after repetitive injury, those tau proteins kind of disassociate from the neurons, and they start to form these little bundles. And these bundles then collect over time and it causes some difficulty in typical function of the brain.
So if I can boil that down to an analogy, so it'd be a little bit like a computer chip that's supposed to be functioning normally, and something is now happening and the circuitry of the chip is no longer able to fire like it should because of buildup of something inside the chip.
Good analogy.
Right? So this happens not only from big blows, right, but from repetitive smaller blows. And this is one of the things that's been sort of talked about more recently. And if I read the literature correctly, there's also concern about an immune response to some of these proteins. You know, normally, Mike, the brain is separated completely. The blood-brain barrier separates the brain from the blood supply so that there's a fluid network around the brain that nourishes it. You know, and sometimes when these injuries, some of these proteins can now enter the blood system and the body doesn't recognize them and it mounts in response to that. It can take a long time for this to show signs. That's why these things don't always show up. Is that correct?
Right. So, I think one of the golden egg here is that we're looking and trying to figure out which type of blood test we can do or brain scan we can do to try and find the signs of concussive injury or this CTE earlier than, you know, death where we have to do the autopsies.
And there's different things that happen. We had talked before the show about somebody like Junior Seau and the football player from Kansas City, Dr. McCarty. And so there are different things that happen as this occurs, correct?
Well, what this has come out of for the listeners who aren't familiar with it is basically really autopsies of former boxers and former NFL players and showing actual physical deposition of these proteins in the brain that are abnormal. And if you look at normal people and you do an autopsy and you look at their brains, they don't have this. And you look at people who've had repetitive trauma and they do have this. And some of them have shown signs of dementia and aggressive behavior and such. And I think this is where this came from. And so as Dr. O'Toole is about to talk to us about, this is where the latest testing is going. How do you identify it? Obviously, after death is not the ideal time to identify this.
Right. And that's what has really made it so difficult to know, you know, who's at risk, how many of us are at risk, what the real incidence of this injury is in the population that are playing sports and even outside of sports, you know, military personnel and other people. We don't really know because right now the gold standard for diagnosis is autopsy. So it makes it hard to kind of project backwards.
Can I ask you this? If after one of these players stops playing, mm-hmm. and somebody like a Junior Seau, if he understands what's going on in his head and he goes and gets medical help and treatment and says, look, these are the things I'm feeling, these are the things that are going on, is there a way to help him?
Well, I'll leave that to Dr. O'Toole. It's a difficult problem.
So it functions very similar to Alzheimer's disease. So there's really not a lot clinically we can do for folks when they get to the point where they're having symptoms as a result of what we think are the tau protein deposition. So they get treated like they've got dementia at this point. There's pretty active research out specifically on the East and West Coast, but also here in Milwaukee looking at ways to kind of help manage these folks if we identify them early, but it's very, very early.
Yeah, and there are some encouraging things. There are some studies in animal studies about trying to activate the portions of the brain that are responsible for cleaning up the brain, which we weren't really aware of until just recently. And I know of one study in mice where the Alzheimer's type depositions were actually reversed. So there is ongoing and very positive research in these areas that may help to reverse this process. But as of the moment, there's no way to undo the damage. That's why everybody's so concerned about it.
And also why we want to work on the preventative side instead of trying to treat symptoms once they develop.
You know, we had talked about heading soccer balls a couple of times throughout the show, and you had talked about, Dr. O'Toole, that there is some talk about not allowing, about making some changes in that game to not allow, you know, anybody under the age of 14 to head a soccer ball, whether at practice or in games. And there's some movement and some momentum for that.
Some of the kind of the thought leaders of concussion in the country, Dr. Cantu, who's a neurosurgeon out east, and Brandi Chastain, who's a U.S. women's soccer champ, are kind of signed on and are pushing this idea that if you're under 14, we shouldn't be heading the soccer ball. And the reason for that is, if you can kind of generalize, if you remember that we were talking about before, the CTE, it comes out of boxing. And so if you think, you know, boxers get lots of big injuries, right, lots of big punches, but lots of little small punches over and over and over and over again. And so you can kind of translate that to soccer and the repetitive trauma to the head from hitting or getting hit by a soccer ball. And so they think that if we can protect the brain when it's most vulnerable in the adolescent years from that repetitive trauma, you're going to help them prevent some more degenerative disease and risk for concussion later.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And you know, I would think 10 years ago, nobody even looked at soccer.
This is the whole thing. This is why the Concussion Care Network through MOSH and through the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine is an important thing, because we now have multiple colleagues who are working on this to try to prevent the problem. That's kind of the whole life. The focus is, when you can't treat something, try to prevent it. Right.
That's
and so right now we can't treat it, so we're trying to prevent it. And there's a lot of focus going into that. And there's a lot of resources out there, people who are listening, that you can go and find information and find physicians who can help you and other healthcare providers. So go to mymosh.com and check out Dr. O'Toole's webpage and get hooked up if you haven't any issues.
Hey, let's get to a break. Other side of the break, I do a high school football show as well, Dr. O'Toole, and we're going to talk a little bit about helmet safety and sensors and the latest in concussion management and some of the things that you guys are doing at MOSH. With that as well. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Welcome back to the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Stone Temple Pilots. Now we're going.
That's
you're back
better.
In. Back in. Dr. Aaron O'Toole, mymosh.com. You can certainly go to mymosh.com to get information on Dr. O'Toole and the Concussion Care Network. Dr. McCarty, Dr. O'Toole, we talked a little bit early in the show about football helmets and safety, but there are some things going on that I didn't know about. I did a Thursday night game. I think it was at Franklin or at Greendale. Maybe it was at Greendale. And they have the sensors. Some of the players have the sensors in the helmet, and I didn't know that was happening. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So I guess the thing I'll lead with is that just like a lot of medicine, especially things that are kind of hot topics, there's a market. Right? There's a marketplace for people to develop things and toys to utilize to make money. Right. So that's my lead point.
OK.
But my secondary point to that is that we don't really know how well these sensors work and how they translate into helping us diagnose concussions or prevent concussions over the long term. We think that intuitively gathering this data is going to be helpful. We don't know which one of these sensors is kind of the best sensor. I think 5 years from now, a lot of us will have sensors of some type. But right now, everything's very, very gray. And so the idea is that there's mouth guards that have sensors, there's helmets that have sensors, there's little skull caps that have sensors. There's a lot of them out there, and they're being used. I think it's a good idea.
What are they doing with all the information they're gathering? I mean,
they're sending it to Google. And then Google's going to make robots to take over. No, there. the truth is that, as Dr. O'Toole said, they're collecting a lot of data. Like, I hate to tell you, so is everything else in your life. They're collecting your data also. Plug for my son's book on big data. But the fact is they're collecting data because we don't have the data. So when they have the data, then they can analyze when they clinically see an injury, and they can look back at when that injury occurred, what did that look like on the sensor, and then try to make correlations between patterns of sensor issues and correlation to clinical injury. So in other words, if we can eventually identify a certain pattern of sensor impact is associated with a clinical concussion, then when a trainer may have that, literally may have that zap their smartphone and say, number 23 just had one of these, you know, and he needs to come out.
Right.
And that's kind of the idea. Now, we're not there yet, is what Dr. O'Toole is saying. And that right now they're marketing these because everybody's interested in trying to do anything they can to prevent concussions. And the truth is we don't really know right now whether those things are going to prevent concussions. But they are a step in the right direction.
Right.
Dr. O'Toole, a couple of weeks ago on the high school football coaches show, the Wisconsin Football Coach Association show with Coach Swiddle, we had Guy Lamb in, and he works for Milwaukee Sporting Goods, and he was talking about what he thinks has been some real progress when it comes to helmets. Mm-hmm. Your feeling on that?
Also super hot topic.
Yeah.
And hard to tell for sure, to be honest with you. There's a lot of conflicting data out there. I think, from my personal opinion, and I think what is going to get kind of shown in the literature as we go further here is that data coming out of Virginia Tech suggests that there are certain helmets that are better than others, we think, at reducing concussive injury. Now, the idea for a helmet is really to, historically, has been to prevent skull fracture, just like mouth guards are to prevent tooth injury,
right?
Not concussion. But if you can think biomechanically, the helmet helps reduce the translation of force from the trauma to the head. Skull is part of the head, but so is the brain. And so if we can better distribute those forces over the helmet in general rather than a direct force to a specific spot in the head, that we're probably going to help reduce concussions.
So here, this is a big question, mm-hmm. I think, for me. You have four children?
Yep.
And how old, if I may ask?
7, 6, 4, and 18 months.
Okay. So when they get old enough, are you going to allow them? What sports will you allow your kids to play?
I'll let them play football. I'll let them play. Hopefully they don't play hockey, but that's my own personal preference. I'm a basketball guy.
Okay.
But I'll let them play sport. I think I'm going to not let them strap on helmets and shoulder pads as peewees.
Right.
I'll probably wait till they're a little older, because really learning to tackle is the big key, and you really can't. You can learn that relatively quickly if you're appropriately instructed later.
You can
run around and learn the other dynamics of the sport and play soccer or other things.
But boys, girls, what do you have, Doctor?
2 and 2.
2 and 2. That's awesome. Well, you're getting into a part in their lives that you're going to be able to make some decisions for them, and that's interesting that you'll allow Patrick or I don't know your other son's name.
Michael.
Michael to play. It's a great name, by the way.
Thanks.
Yeah. to play football. And I think that's at least for me and for people that with the knowledge that you have, as long as they're being coached correctly.
Right.
You know, that's kind of the key. When we talk about these sensors in helmets, and we talk about it at the high school level, obviously at the college level and the pro level, they're doing these as well, correct?
Right.
Different sensors?
Different sensors.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a handful of sensors out there. The ones that you were mentioning at Franklin are, I think, behind the ear sensors. But again, there's a couple that are in the mouth guards.
Right.
There are a couple that you plant into the helmet. And the idea is, just like your smartphone has got this little gyroscope that can tell its position in space, that's what those sensors are doing. They're helping sense the impact and the change in direction of your head after a contact.
Hey, really quickly, and I like to ask the doctors from Mosh that come in, Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine is really a great place. Why is it so important for you and some of the things that you get to do there?
So for Mosh, for me, at least, you know, I'm a family medicine guy, so I don't do any orthopedic stuff specifically, right? I don't get to do the cool surgery stuff.
Right.
But what happens is that there's obviously a ton of interplay between general medicine, concussion, and athletics and orthopedic injuries, right? And so the benefit that these students, these athletes have from our trainers that then get them to me appropriately for medical care, whether it be concussion or otherwise, I think is super important. And they've been very instrumental in helping me kind of develop this program, because I think it's going to be very important going forward.
Yeah, so, we always talk about the same things, but it's true. It's a team, right? So, everything else is a team. And like, for example, yesterday I was at Mosh and working with some of our techs over there, like Brittany and Tanya, who are big sports fans. And, they're talking about the Wimbledon final. And tomorrow, if you haven't seen it, Federer is 33 years old. He's playing Novak Djokovic, number one player in the world. And if you haven't seen tennis in a while, I would really encourage you to check it out, because you're seeing one of the greatest players who's ever lived against one of the other greatest players who's ever lived. And it's a great opportunity to check that out. But, we work as a team. We all work together. And, in the next few weeks here, we're going to have some other people come in and talk about their specialties. We're lucky to have Dr. O'Toole in here this morning helping us out with concussion care. And, it's just great for us to be able to, not everybody can know everything anymore, right? So we don't try to.
Or how to pronounce words.
Or how to pronounce words. Although some words you are very good at pronouncing.
I'm really good at Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine or mymosh.com. Dr. O'Toole, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
It was really good to see you played high school basketball and football.
I did.
Yeah, were you a scorer or rebounder? What were you?
He was a dunker.
Yeah.
Huh? He was a dunker.
He's not a dunker.
He was a dunker.
If he's dunking, they're playing an 8-foot hoop somewhere in Minneapolis.
Michael, this is radio. He was a dunker.
High flyer. I saw these on YouTube. You're unbelievable.
Mad hops.
It's really good to see you again. Dr. McCarty, thank you so much.
Thank you,
I
Mike.
Look forward to our conversation. See, I can't say that word. Next week, Dr. Aaron O'Toole, mymosh.com. Dr. Brian McCarty, mymosh.com. Go over there, get some information on those guys. This has been the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM.
The Fan. Happy anniversary.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. Sure, she said that. That was a great radio program.